Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for October the 28th, 2018, 9 days until Election Day. This is our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we take a look at City Hall, go over to the State House, and all the way up to the White House. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, I think hot coffee's in order for this morning. This is one of those kind of sleep-in Sundays, don't you think?
I would go along with that.
Yeah.
But we have to work.
We have to work, yes, yes. We do it so you don't have to. That's kind of my motto.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of sloppy out there and a little windy and I suppose, you know, good football weather maybe. But
we'll see about that, sure.
Well, I wasn't necessarily saying we'll see good football.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
Good football weather.
It's going to be a little chilly at the lake and windy today in the 40s at Soldier Field. And we have a wind chill, 42 above.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the real temperature?
The real temperature is only 47. So
we knocked down 5 degrees.
We knocked down 5 degrees, right?
Oh, okay. Right. Great way to start the day. Yes. Wow. Well, I started my day when I got up. I put a pork shoulder in the crock pot and with a little bit of 17th Street barbecue sauce and set it on low. So that's going to be good in about 12 hours.
Okay.
I think.
Can we go over now?
You don't want to go now. I mean, it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet.
Well, we can wait.
I don't know what your idea of waiting is.
Okay.
No, it should be ready in time for the Blackhawks game tonight, which what a weird schedule, Cork, isn't it? You play a 7:30 game in St. Louis and then come home and it's a 5 o'clock afternoon game.
A very rare 5 o'clock start at the United Center against the Edmonton Oilers. So the Hawks will not skate this morning. They're going to take the morning off.
And is it a network game or something? Is that what
you know?
It is?
I'm not exactly sure why they decided to make this one a 5 o'clock start.
I mean, because it's normally the 6 o'clock on Sundays.
Normally, yes, correct. It'd be an hour later.
But yeah, very strange. And well, maybe it's good if with a quick turnaround, so they can wash that loss out of their hair from last night, 7-3 to my beloved St. Louis Blues. Yeah, I've got lots of. I had to work last night. Mm-hmm. I was helping with our story on the president coming to Southern Illinois. Some of my friends actually wondered if I was in Murfreesboro and could I, you know, just hop over and go to the game. But how did it get to be 7-3?
Well, it was a 4-3 game after two periods, and then it got a little sloppy, should we say. There was an empty net goal mixed in there as well.
Defense?
Defense a little bit, yeah. And the Blues were just they were on a mission. They lost 7-4 to the Blue Jackets at home the couple of nights before. There have been a lot of media reports in St. Louis that Mike Yeo was already in trouble, their head coach. So it seemed as though it was a kind of a perfect storm situation where the Blackhawks had played so well at home the previous two games, and then came into a hostile environment, and you know they held their own. I mean they were only down one goal after two periods.
Yeah, I mean because I kind of was able to just catch the score when it was 4-3. So
yeah, but
when I saw the end result, it was like, what the heck happened here?
Yeah, and early in the game, I mean the Blues scored their first goal 18 seconds in.
Ouch!
So it was another one of those playing from behind most of the night.
Why? You know, I mean,
yeah, you could look at it as a number of different ways as far as the defense goes. You know, you've got the two stalwarts, you've got Seabrook and Keith, and then you got a lot of, you know, mix and match. You know, Brandon Manning's got some NHL experience. Jokke Haru's 19 years old. Gustafson is playing in his second full NHL season. You can go through the list and say, wah, wah, wah. But, you know, when you play for Joel Quenneville, you have to play defense. And it doesn't only apply to the guys that are positioned as defensemen. It goes to forwards. You have to play both ways.
Well, I don't mean to equate the Blues to the New York Rangers, but that Rangers game was spectacular.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You hold them to 19 shots.
That's what you're talking about.
In a game. And the Blues, in the previous games, the Blues had over 30 shots.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that good a team to be able to get shots on goal. They should be shots that get blocked.
Yeah, exactly. Shots that get blocked or shots that aren't even headed toward the net because you get a stick in the
right,
way.
Right.
And, you know, there was some of that early in the game, especially after they gave up the first goal. But then it kind of broke down, and there were several defensive breakdowns on very easy. The first two goals for St. Louis were tap-ins, basically.
I guess it's so good I was busy working.
Yeah, you know, I would have heard your fist banging on a table even where I was watching the game last night, which was about 20 or 25 miles away from here.
Yes, it would have been very frustrating, that's for sure. What do we expect today from the Bears and the New York Jets?
Well, the Bears are going to be wearing their throwback jerseys today, those 1940s with the orange numbers and the dark navy tops, and Khalil Mack still questionable. He's expected to play, although I wonder if they will change their tune once the weather does what it's supposed to do, and maybe if that field is slick, I'm not sure he's going to play.
I was just going to ask you about that. Given the weather conditions, do you take that risk?
Yeah, I wouldn't personally. I think they probably, and again, it's easy to say this now because you know he played in the game against the Patriots. I would have sat him against them as well. But you know what? He's a football player that's never missed a game in his NFL career, and I don't think he wants to start now, even with a gimpy ankle. But, you know, I guess the philosophy is they'd rather have 80% of Khalil Mack than 0% of Khalil Mack. And, again, 80% of Mack is probably better than 100% of a lot of defenders.
Yeah, true.
Allen Robinson, also the wide receiver, is listed as questionable. He is not expected to play today.
I know nothing about the Jets, so this would be interesting.
They're not very good, but you know the Bears right now are you know they have lost two in a row, and another. This is the midway point of their games against the AFC East. They lost to Miami. They lost to the Patriots. They've got the Jets this week. Then they go to Buffalo next week.
Ah,
so four in a row, no talk against the AFC East.
There we go, and. Who knows? It may be snowing up in Buffalo by...
It's very true, by next weekend.
Yeah, by next weekend. And we've got what could be the last game of the World Series coming up.
Yeah, how about the Red Sox? They were down 4-0 going into the seventh inning, the top of the seventh inning.
That's when I last glimpsed a score, was when it was 4-0 Dodgers.
And they just continue to pour it on. They scored all 9 of their runs seventh inning and later.
Wow.
And just kind of bewildered the Dodgers, who... thought they had that game in hand. They thought they would ride the momentum of the Muncy home run in the 18th inning the night before.
Did you stay up for that?
Are you kidding me? No way. If I had a dog in the fight, yeah, maybe I would have.
Yeah,
but
no
dog and no fight, so no sleep.
No,
it was not on my agenda.
I was good through the ninth inning, and then it was time to say bye-bye.
Yeah, I tuned in back and forth. I was basically, quote-unquote, watching the game on Twitter. Figuring when it was time to tune back in, I had a couple other things going, but you certainly thought that the Dodgers were going to even up the series and have a chance to take a 3-2 lead going into the game six in Boston. But now there may not be a game six in Boston.
Well, somebody tweeted of that 18 inning game, like the length of that game, 7 hours 20 minutes,
yep,
was longer than the entire 1936 World Series.
Yep. How about that? They probably didn't have commercials back
in
that.
I was just going to say, what's the big difference? It would be the commercial break.
No, and now they're playing commercials within the game with that little double box action where they, and now a word from so-and-so, and now a word from, it's getting a little ridiculous.
Any way to make a buck and
that's
pay
true.
For those big contracts.
Very, very true.
That's how it works. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy, of course, has the latest sports. Producer Cassara is fielding your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at that number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is marking his mail-in ballot this morning. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead on The Spin, after the 7:30 news and sports, we'll speak to my good friend Chris Mooney from the University of Illinois, and we'll handicap the contests on the November 6th ballot. At the top of the hour, after the news, we'll be speaking to Democratic governor candidate J.B. Pritzker. And then after the 8:30 newscast, we'll speak to Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. That's all up ahead. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio on this drizzly, windy Sunday morning. A good stay under the covers if you can kind of Sunday morning. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics. And President Trump was in Murfreesboro, Illinois last night. Murfreesboro, just west of Carbondale. Was there for a campaign rally for Republican Representative Mike Vost, who's being challenged by Democrat Brendan Kelly down in the 12th Congressional District. Trump decided to go ahead with the rally despite the tragic shootings at a Pittsburgh synagogue that left 11 people dead and 6 others wounded. Trump says that those who perpetrate evil shouldn't destroy the schedules of our lives. Trump toned down his rhetoric somewhat as he urged unity.
In America, we love our families, we love our neighbors, and we protect our community. We trust in God. We protect the freedom of worship. And we believe in the power of prayer. We defend our Constitution. We defend our heritage. And we rally around our great American flag like nobody does. All of us here tonight are united by these same American values. And we are all fighting to defend these values in this election. This is a very, very important election.
That's President Donald Trump down in Murfreesboro. The appeals to prayer and faith are somewhat noteworthy because Murfreesboro is so far south that it's actually part of the traditional evangelical Bible Belt that runs from the south through the Midwest and into Missouri. So very kind of interesting juxtaposition there as he moves from talking about prayer, God, flag, Constitution, and then into the partisanship of saying everybody that was in that arena, all Trump supporters, was there to defend those values. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Been quite a week as far as news is concerned. I mean, we have the tragic shootings in the Pittsburgh synagogue. Before that, it was the dozen mysterious packages sent by a serial bomber to top former Democratic officials, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, CNN, others. The president spoke on Friday about this after the arrest of a suspect.
I am pleased to inform you that law enforcement has apprehended the suspect and taken him into custody. It's an incredible job by law enforcement. We've carried out a far-reaching federal, state, and local investigation to find the person or persons responsible for these events. These terrorizing acts are despicable and have no place in our country.
Almost a word for word of what he said yesterday about what happened in Pittsburgh. Now, earlier in the week, Trump traveled to northern Wisconsin as these packages were starting to show up. Traveled to northern Wisconsin to campaign, where he addressed the issue and said there should be more civility in our politics. Now, Remember, this is Donald Trump saying this.
There's much we can do to bring our nation together. For example, those engaged in the political arena must stop treating political opponents as being morally defective. Have to do that. The language of moral condemnation and destructive routine, these are arguments and disagreements that have to stop. No one should carelessly compare political opponents to historical villains, which is done often. It's done all the time. Got to stop. We should not mob people in public spaces or destroy public property.
But Trump being Trump, he took things a step further and blamed the fake news media for the country's divisions and incivility, even though CNN was a target of the bomber.
As part of a larger national effort to bridge our divides and bring people together, the media also has a responsibility to set a civil tone and to stop the endless hostility and constant negative and oftentimes false attacks and stories. Have to do it. Have to do it. They've got to stop.
That's President Donald Trump, who the other day was at a rally and was promoting the fact that a member of Congress had body slammed a reporter. Joining me now on the phone is my good friend Chris Mooney, who is a political scientist at the University of Illinois, and he's also part of the university's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Chris, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. My pleasure.
I want to kind of go through some of the races on the November 6th ballot, but more immediately...
You don't want to talk about Trump?
Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's right, yes. It's sometimes it just makes you cry a little bit when you hear these things. But I actually wonder who wrote that stuff for him, pensive remarks. And I'm thinking maybe what that was a message to Trump. You know, a secret message from his staff.
By them writing it and putting it on the teleprompter.
Exactly. They figured out this way he's got to read it. And he read it, but the question is, did it sink in? And it obviously didn't. So,
well, and of course, the president was in Murfreesboro, Illinois, last night. Mm-hmm. And you had Mike Bost, who is running against Brennan Kelly down there in the 12th district, and that's kind of metro east and then goes across straight south. But it was kind of interesting. I thought you also had Rodney Davis, who's the Republican congressman, Springfield area. He was there. But
Hultgren, too, right?
Then you had Randy Hultgren showed up. And now, Randy Hultgren from the west and northwest suburbs. Well, but Hultgren was on stage and speaking. And
the governor was off stage. Is that it?
The governor was off stage and wasn't even mentioned.
Mm-hmm. But he came.
And yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice by the governor. You know, in some ways, it's sort of what he's been doing, and that's getting him in so much trouble, is that he sort of goes there a little bit, but not really all the way, you know? And it's like, well, I do this. Oh, well, I didn't really mean to do that. I'll do this other thing. It's like with the HB 40, with this abortion bill. Like, he said, oh, I'm not going to sign it. Oh, never mind, I'm going to sign it. And then he spends all the time trying to backtrack on that. So it's like, make a choice, go with it, you know, and live with the consequences. In this case, he goes down there. He's kind of there. He's not really there, and, you know, are you going with the Trumpers or you're not going? I mean, make a choice and go with it. I think that's one of his problems throughout the administration, is that he's made decisions and then he's kind of gone back on them. I think that's a problem.
Kind of
for him. That's
trouble,
been a problem for him, I should say.
Trouble about picking a lane.
Right, exactly.
Basically. I mean, because we kind of saw that with, if you remember, during the impasse, the historic state budget impasse, there was, in the budget, there was an item basically that accounted for X amount of dollars through a grand bargain. And then when the grand bargain got close, the administration decided it didn't go far enough, and they pulled the plug on it.
Right, and that's not being in the world of mergers and acquisitions and that sort of heady, you know, world that he comes from, I don't know how they do business in that world. But in politics, you don't do business that way, because you have to be able to, you have to be able to trust the other person. You have to, and it's not so much that, oh, I think he's going to do me dirt. It's that, you know, when somebody says something, you have to believe what they say, because you've got to base your own decisions on those, you know, on those positions of the other people. And, you know, you're all trying to work together, trying to figure out how we can move forward here. But if, you know, if somebody keeps changing their mind, whether, you know, again, whether out of malice or out of incompetence or out of something else, it just makes it hard to get the job done. And so I don't think this is like something he tried to do and he screwed it up, or something he, you know, it was just a mistake. It's just his approach. It just doesn't work in this world, and that's one of the problems you get when you get people coming straight into government from non-government work. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't work, because they don't understand what's going on.
We're speaking with Chris Mooney, political scientist from the University of Illinois, who's part of the university's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio, joined on the phone by Chris Mooney, political scientist, University of Illinois. Chris, just to go back to Trump here a little bit, one of the things, mm-hmm. you know, obviously we had the tragic, senseless murders at the synagogue in Pittsburgh. Before that, you had the serial bomber. And one of the things that Trump allies, Republicans, have said privately is that they had sensed there was like Republican momentum, and these news events have so, you know, taken public attention away that's hurt Republican momentum.
Well, everybody makes a think about these things at this point in time, and I don't like to. I mean, I like to see the data. You know, I like if there's some polling, yes, that we can. But you know, people get hunches, people get feelings. Oh, the big mo, as George Bush the first once called it. Yeah, and certainly there's probably some of that, you know, in one way or the other. But it's just hard to know what's going on out there. I mean, that's what polling is all about. Polling is super hard to do. You know, it's a big business. People have been doing it for some 60, 70 years on a serious basis, and we know pretty well what to do, but it's a hard one to, you know, basically trying to tap into what people are thinking at any given moment in time. And because we're living in, you know, at this moment is a very dynamic and probably fairly fluid period for a number of people, right? Before, especially with these events. And, you know, that who knows what's going to happen. And I think, you know, this is just a little motivation for everybody to get busy and, you know, all campaigns to get out there and get their people out to the polls.
You know, when I look at the elections, and of course, we are in swing. I mean, we've got early voting going on, mail-in voting. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the statewide elections, this one tells me that when it comes to some of the most hotly contested races, the key is going to be, not that it wasn't before, but the key is really going to be suburban women in deciding, yes, this election. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Well, I think we've been talking about, you know, the swing voter in this state. I just got done talking to my class about, I have a class in Illinois politics this semester at UIC, and I'm talking about this. And, you know, there once upon a time was where people used to talk about upstate, downstate, and that was the main dynamic of the state, right? And but the suburban, the swell of the suburban collars since the 1950s has really changed the dynamic, and to the point where in the last, I would say, even 20 years, hard to say exactly, but around that time, the swing voter in the state is I've got a picture of her on a PowerPoint. She's about 34. She's got a kid in the back seat that she's taking to daycare or to soccer or something like that. And she's driving an SUV, and she's driving around in Schaumburg or Lyle or something like that. That is the person. She's socially, you know, fairly liberal. She has no problem with gay people. She's, you know, immigrants maybe make her a little nervous, but not, you know, not that much. But she doesn't like her taxes, and you know, she doesn't like Donald Trump saying all these nasty things about people. So that's one of the problems that some of these suburban Republicans have at the moment.
Yeah, and you know, the governor. Back in the day, it was soccer moms, I suppose you'd say. But
I'll call them soccer mom now. I think it's perfectly appropriate. I mean, and that's the kind of person we're talking about here.
And I think, you know, we saw evidence of that in a couple of ways. One, in the 2016 election, the fact that all of the collar counties, traditional Republican collar counties, except McHenry, all of them went for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And also, as you mentioned about the dynamic of the suburbs in the 50s, but the demographic of the suburbs, the demographic makeup of the suburbs is changing very rapidly. I mean,
right.
DuPage County is not the old rock-ribbed Republican DuPage County that it was back when I was growing up there in the early 60s.
Well, and in fact, DuPage County is really the epicenter of legislative fighting, right? In this, you know, of all the one, I mean, there's legislative seats around the state here and there in different parts of the area, but that are being contested, because most legislative seats are not contested. Let's put that. I mean, they're not contested certainly in any serious way. And I can't remember the number off the top of my head because it's Sunday morning, but a large number of them are not contested at all.
Right.
I mean, there's nobody else on the ballot. So the ones that are contested, there's maybe a dozen of them or something, and maybe depending on what time of the race that they're paying attention to, that the both sides, you know, the parties writ large are working on. And the bulk of those are in DuPage, or the place where they're most concentrated is in DuPage right now.
Right. And I mean, it represents quite a shift, because back in the early 60s, 70s, 80s, even, you know, in eastern DuPage County, Elmhurst, Villa Park, Lombard mm-hmm. area, that was represented by Pate Phillip, who was the
yes.
Republican Senate president. Lee Daniels was the Republican leader and served as speaker for those 2 years that interrupted Mike Madigan's total. And when mm-hmm. you look at now that area, basically, it's represented by Democrats.
Right. I mean, I remember when Tom Colleton, who's a senator, won that first Democratic seat in part of the DuPage from the Senate for, you know, since who knows how long, right?
Right.
Probably forever, or since probably since the Great Depression. But still, I, at the time, I thought, well, geez, this is going to have Pate Phillips spinning in his grave. And somebody reminded me he wasn't dead.
I was just going to say, Pate's not dead yet. Yeah, you're right, though. Well, and he was, you know, longtime DuPage County Republican chairman, too. So.
Oh, you bet. But he was a symbol of the Republican Party for a long time. Korea War vet. Yeah. The guy.
But I just think, you know, when people are looking at for results on November 6th, you got to look at those suburban totals.
Right. Yeah, I really think if you start seeing what's coming in on these congressional races, especially that Kasten and Roskam race,
right,
that
the sixth.
Again, I don't, you know, the polling shows a very tight. Same with the Roskam and Underwood race.
Holcren-Underwood.
Holcren-Underwood, sorry.
That's
yeah, because they're further out. They're more in the exurbs. They get all the way close to Rockford. But, you know, the national organizations like Cook Report or whatever have been talking about the Holcren race as being closer all along and being more of a toss-up. But it doesn't appear to be playing out the way. It's hard to know. I mean, it's hard to know because all the polls are so close on these particular couple of races that, you know, and at this point you're talking fairly quick and dirty polling. So you got pretty wide margin of error.
That's what I was just going to say. That's why, I mean, some of the numbers I've seen, and including out of the New York Times, it's the margin of error is sizable,
like 5% or something.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
And it really makes it. It I don't think it gives a clear indication, but also it shows just how tight these races are.
Right. And it doesn't give it a clear indication on any given poll, and this is something good for your listeners, any given poll could be certainly in error, especially when you get that wide margin of error, it could be any, you know. But what you want to look for is the trend. You want to watch, you know, is the same candidate sort of up all the time, you know, over five or six, you know, over a period of, you know, whatever time you got. And, of course, the lower level of the race is the less polling you get, so you have less of that. But the people that are running the campaigns, they do this more or less every day. And they're called tracking polls. They're very dirty, but they kind of get a feel for how things are moving. And that's very important in terms of planning strategy for the campaigns.
Well, and we'll be watching the only poll that counts, right? I'm so sick of that. I'm so sick of that response. Yeah. That's why I never ask. I never ask politicians about the polls, because I know what the answer is going to be. But we'll be watching on November 6th.
That's right. If they're up, they love them. If they're down, they don't. Is the old LBJ approach.
It's exactly right. Chris Mooney, political scientist, University of Illinois, a member of the university's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. As always, thank you so much this morning.
Yep, thanks, Rick. Have a good day.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. This is WGN 720 Chicago. And, Dave, you had something you wanted to mention here?
A quick correction to a story that we had in the newscast. The vigil that will be held in honor of the shootings at the Pittsburgh synagogue yesterday will be held at Federal Plaza, not Daly. The time is correct, though, 5:30 to 7 this evening at Federal Plaza, not Daly Plaza. And also, any moment now, authorities in Pittsburgh will be briefing people, giving us an update on yesterday's incident.
All right, very good. Good, Dave. Thank you for staying on top of the story. Well, joining me now on the phone is Democratic candidate for governor, J.B. Pritzker. J.B., thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Glad to be here, Rick. Good morning.
Appreciate you coming on. I wanted to do something. This is really kind of the last show that we're going to be doing with candidates before the election. Wanted to give both you and the governor an opportunity to talk about your campaigns and your issues, not so much about the other candidate. And I wanted to talk to you about, obviously, the kind of a centerpiece of your campaign is the graduated income tax. And to me, this is almost kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because you're proposing a revision of the tax structure, but yet there are no rates to go along with it, which provides a vacuum that the governor's been able to hit you over. I mean, certainly you must have some kind of idea now of what the amount of revenue that the state needs to raise to accomplish some of the goals that you want to do.
Well, may I just begin this morning by sending my sympathies out to the families who lost loved ones yesterday in Pittsburgh and also in Kentucky, where a gunman attempted to enter a black church to commit heinous acts. He killed two other people before that, and then of course the 11 people killed at the synagogue yesterday, as well as the four police officers and two others who were wounded. I'm heartbroken, and frankly, I'm a bit angry about it.
Understood.
Let's talk about your question, though. First of all, the governor is defending the most unfair tax system in the entire country. Illinois has the most regressive taxes. People in the middle class are paying about double what people at the top are paying. People who are in the bottom 20 and 40% are paying almost 14% of their income in taxes in the state, and that includes the very regressive property taxes and sales taxes, as well as the regressive flat income tax. So the purpose of a graduated income tax, a fair tax system, is to try to make that fairer. In other words, to ask people like Bruce Rauner and me to pay a little bit more and to give a break to everybody else who is suffering both from higher income taxes, regressive income taxes, but also from property taxes. So one of the things that we benefit from if we change the income tax system is the ability to lower property taxes, which of course is driving so many people out of the state of Illinois. So I'm fighting against the regressive, backward, unfair tax system that Bruce Rauner is defending, because it benefits him. That's why he's defending it. And the middle class has just been put upon time and time again by Bruce Rauner. He just doesn't understand that working families ought to be in charge in this state. They are the ones who are paying the bulk of the taxes. But they are the ones who he's tried to take away collective bargaining rights from and lower wages.
Okay, but to lower property taxes, there's a price tag for that. I mean, to effectively shift state income tax dollars to make up for what the local property taxes are, which would be primarily education funding. There's a price tag to that. Do you have an idea of what we're talking about there to make a meaningful property tax reduction?
Well, the first thing is, again, to make sure that we're shifting the burden overall to people who can most afford it. And then the second thing, as you're raising, is to provide exemptions for people to their property taxes, again, because people are paying a higher percentage of the value of their homes if you're middle class than you are if you're wealthy. So, look, again, this is something that we're going to have to work with. Remember how we have to get this done. It's a fair tax system that requires a constitutional amendment in Illinois, and you know that requires a 60% vote of the House, a 60% vote of the Senate, and then we've got to get a 60% vote of the people of Illinois in a referendum. So in order to get that done, we've got to make it very transparent. We've also got to make sure everybody's at the table with the negotiation of what the break points and what the rates ought to be. So I think it would be irresponsible, frankly, at this point to start naming those rates without actually bringing everybody to the table. I'm not governor today, but
I'm not necessarily talking about what the rates are. I'm just talking about, in a comprehensive way, do you have an idea of the spending that would you're talking about here? Spending for making up on the property tax side, spending for infrastructure spending? I mean, because in many respects, the graduated tax has become kind of a catch-all here for things you want to do.
Yeah, this isn't just about raising revenue, though. This is also about growing the economy. Remember, in order to grow the economy, we've got to, first of all, have a governor who understands how to create jobs, and I've done that for much of my career, helped people create jobs, and I've done it myself. This governor has not. In fact, he's created fewer jobs than his predecessor did in the same amount of time, and he called his predecessor a miserable failure at job creation. So this is all about lowering property taxes and changing the system to make it more attractive for companies. You know, you hear often why companies are leaving, why people are leaving the state. And there are several reasons. One is the instability of state government. Another is the fact that our property taxes are so high, people just are, you know, prone to wanting to leave. And businesses themselves say, why would I come here with property taxes as high as they are? So we need to address that issue, and we also need to make sure that state government is stable enough. Remember, 2 years without a budget under Bruce Rauner, a third year where he vetoed the budget. If you're a company outside of the state of Illinois thinking about coming here, you're asking yourself, why would I want to come to a state that can't get its act together because the governor won't compromise? And the governor badmouths the state everywhere he goes. So if you're a company, you're thinking, well, I don't want to go to a place where the leader of the state doesn't even believe in the state. So we got a lot of work to do. I think we can increase revenues even more so by creating jobs in the economy and growing our economy in the state of Illinois. And the way to do that, again, is to bring people together with the principles that I've laid out for a fair tax system. We can help do that by making sure that we've got the voices of Republicans and Democrats at the table and that we're competitive with the states around us, almost all of whom have a graduated income tax system.
We're speaking with Democratic candidate for Governor J.B. Pritzker. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined on the phone by Democratic candidate for Governor J.B. Pritzker. Mr. Pritzker, right before the break, as we were talking about the graduated tax, and you were talking about the importance of growing the economy to help generate revenues for the state. But are you saying that your view of a graduated rate income tax would be that it would be revenue neutral compared to the flat tax we have now?
What I'm suggesting is we need not just a tax system, but a government that's actually attracting businesses to the state of Illinois, a graduated fair income tax system will help us keep middle class families here in the state. We also, of course, I've talked a lot about the out migration problem, and if we can reverse the problem of high property taxes in the state, we also need to address higher education in Illinois, which, you know, unfortunately under Bruce Rauner has driven 72,000 kids to not go to school in Illinois. And when they don't go to school here, when they leave the state, 70% of them don't come back. And those are our best economic resources for the future.
Sure,
they're also our kids.
But
we've got to have a strong higher education system, too.
Understood. And there's certainly been a lack of investment in higher education. We've talked a lot about that in the show, not just...
In fact, disinvestment,
yes.
20% cut in higher ed under Bruce Rauner and a 30% cut on the table by him.
Well, and certainly it's been shortchanged higher ed for over a decade. Truly, in this
state. But he's made it worse, and he's driven it off a cliff. Look at all the layoffs. Look at all the kids who have left just during his term.
But again, the question being, do you foresee a graduated rate tax to be revenue neutral versus the current revenues generated by a flat tax?
Well, again, this is about, you know, the priorities of a budget that we've got to get passed. And the answer is that the combination of revenues that we can bring in by growing the economy, revenues that I think we'll bring in by legalizing marijuana, taxing it, which also brings a lot of more fairness into the criminal justice system and safety to our consumers, of course. And the possibility of sports betting in the state. These are all sources of revenue that should be utilized to make sure that we're balancing the budget. And remember, these budgets, you know, even though they're constitutionally required to be balanced, as you and I both know, budgets have not been balanced under Bruce Rauner or frankly for many years before. There's a structural deficit in the state, and we've got to address that first and foremost to make sure that we're actually paying the bills of the state, which racked up to $16 billion under Bruce Rauner, with $1 billion of late payment fees because of him that are owed by the taxpayers of Illinois. And we've got to address the 8 credit downgrades that have occurred under Bruce Rauner alone and the 5 universities that have fallen to junk credit status. He's the biggest deficit spender in the history of the state of Illinois. It's important that we get our finances under control, and all of these things are going to play a factor in especially growing the economy of the state.
One thing, I think you've been pretty clear that as far as the state's pension issue, pension debt, pension problems, but given the legal rulings by the state Supreme Court, we have to pay what we're owed. Do you see any way that could alleviate that growing percentage of the tax dollar going to pensions in a way that would free up money for other state services?
Yes, I do. And, you know, there are a number of plans out there, and I'm sure you've seen some of them, but I'll just give you an idea. First of all, let's recognize that pensions that are owed to people who are retiring are an obligation of the state, a moral obligation in most cases, in my view. And we've got to make sure and step up to the plate. And the best way to do that, first of all, this is part of the budget. So all the things that we're talking about, balancing the budget, you know, include pensions in them. But one of the biggest things we've got to address, in my view, is the pension ramp that was put in place in 1995, where along the way, first of all, they didn't put enough money in the pension ramp itself, but along the way, governors have skipped payments and made the problem much worse. So we now have to look at, you know, leveling out the amount of money that we're putting into pensions, probably raising up the amount by some, and leveling it out so that we can grow our way out of the problem by virtue of a growing economy. And that, I think, is a reasonable solution. There are others that have been put forward, too. Remember, there's also a Tier 2 system that's been put in place for pensions, which has bent the cost curve and made it easier on the state budget. And those are for new employees of state government. Last thing I'd point out is that state government over the last 20 or 25 years has gone from about 85,000 employees to about 55,000 employees. And Illinois now has the lowest number of state employees per capita of any state in the United States. So it's already happened that, you know, the number of people in state government's been cut significantly. And so that aspect of the budget has been dealt with. But, you know, people got early retirement. They are in the system collecting pensions today. That will work its way through the system over time, but that Tier 2 system at least helps to bend the cost curve. And if we change the way we pay in and the amortization schedule to level it out, we can deal with the pension crisis in the state.
Just a real quick to clarify, when you're talking about, obviously the ramp would require higher payments, kind of multiplier effect each time. You're saying kind of to level out that payment?
Yeah, the idea is the same problem. If you had this problem of you put in an amortization schedule on your home to pay your mortgage, and it was one that looked like the ramp that there exists in the amortization schedule for pensions in Illinois, you'd have to deal with that. There's no way you could increase the income in your home as fast as, let's say, that ramp was going up. And so what would you do? You'd put in a greater principal payment on your home earlier in order to level out the amortization going forward so that you can grow your way out of the problem. And that's really what the proposal is. Okay. The one proposal that I've seen that I'm talking about would do. There are a number of them, but I'm just giving you one example. I think you got to look at it holistically, though. The budget is unbalanced, and we've got to look at everything, including significant efficiencies that we can find in state government. And I've been talking about that for some time now, lowering the cost of our Medicaid system by making sure that we're doing a lot toward prevention, which is something Bruce Rauner has cut significantly during his term. If you can deal with, for example, someone's type 2 diabetes earlier, it costs the state a lot less in Medicaid payments. And the same thing is true, of course, in early childhood education, something I've been a national leader in for more than 20 years, that if you provide kids, particularly at-risk kids, with early childhood education that is quality preschool and child care, what we get is kids who are prepared for kindergarten, which means that there's a lot less remedial spending in our education system, and those kids are much more likely to graduate from high school and college, get a job, and much less likely to end up incarcerated, all of which are savings for our taxpayers.
That's J.B. Pritzker, Democratic candidate for governor. J.B., thank you so much for joining me this morning. I know you've got a lot of miles still to travel on the campaign trail before we get to November 6th. I appreciate you joining me on the show.
Great to talk to you. Thanks, Rick.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, and joining me on the phone is Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Governor, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, good morning, and thank you, sir, for hosting this important discussion about this critical election.
I wanted to talk to you, first of all, most immediately, because I know you were down in Murfreesboro yesterday. You had mentioned how you wanted to meet with the president, talk to him, certain thank yous for federal money for transportation, things like that. Did you actually get a chance to speak to the president?
No, unfortunately, I did not. He was running about an hour late.
And I was wondering, speaking of that, were you able to even stay for the entire rally?
I watched it, the tail end of it from off-site. I was not there for the entire rally.
Okay, I just want the decision to kind of, I mean, this is, you've had a weird relationship with Donald Trump, and the decision to go to Murfreesboro, I mean, is that a, what's the motivation behind that?
Well, this election is critically important. We've got to make sure that everybody in every county and every community gets out to vote. I was there as part of our Republican leadership. We had Republican leaders from across the state of Illinois there. The vast majority of our congressional delegation was there. Our candidates for the General Assembly in Southern Illinois were there. Republican activists, Republican grassroots members, volunteers, where they are there to thank them and cheer them on. We've got to make sure that everybody gets out and votes. The future of Illinois is very much on the line. What happens in this election 8 days from now, 9 days from now, will determine Illinois course for another generation, because there's a risk that if Pritzker gets in there with Madigan, we will have gerrymandered districts again by Madigan after the 2020 census, which will devastate two-party democracy in the state. There's a high probability that Pritzker and Madigan will change our state constitution and the protection for a flat income tax, and we'll quickly have some of the highest income taxes in America, crushing the middle class and pushing job creators out of the state. And there's a risk that if they get in, we'll have more regulations, more big government, $11 billion in new spending, and the stream of businesses that have been leaving Illinois for decades will turn into a massive flood. Illinois could be devastated if that were to happen.
Governor, you actually, the first thing you touched on there about redistricting and remapping, and I've talked with people about this issue repeatedly on the shows, and one of curiosity, I know, you know, reapportionment, redistricting, it's kind of a wonky kind of thing, but it would seem to me, the argument that kind of goes to the point of one party control and fairness in elections, and I'm not, I guess I question whether you've stressed that enough in your campaign.
Boy, we've sure tried to stress it. It's critically important. The redistricting reform we need is just so long overdue. We've had gerrymandered districts by Mike Madigan for 20 years. It's one of the reasons that he had a supermajority in the General Assembly when I became governor. And the reality is that gerrymandering of districts has been done by Republicans in other states, but done by Democrats here. It's a massive failure. I believe it's the major cause of the acrimony and dysfunction that we have at the federal government and Congress and in our General Assembly. Both parties try to dominate power unilaterally by manipulating the districts so that the politicians pick the voters instead of the voters picking the politicians. And I helped support the Fair Maps proposal that Madigan sued and defeated. He sued it us and defeated it more than a year and a half ago. Madigan wants the ability to gerrymander the districts so he can enhance his power. We will have one-party rule again. We will have total dominance by Madigan and his machine if Pritzker gets into the governorship and works with Madigan to allow that gerrymandering. Devastation for the state.
So when you say you've tried to get that message out about redistricting, I mean, as I said, I'm not so sure it was a dominant message at any point. And you've said yourself, you know, one of the things you've had difficulty with is getting your message out.
Well, you know, unfortunately, Mr. Pritzker inherited billions, and he's using those billions to try to buy office. It's the reason Madigan recruited him to run for governor. Madigan wants those access to that incredible wealth that Pritzker inherited, did not earn himself, by the way. And Pritzker is outspending me by more than $100 million in this election. It's been very difficult to get a message out through the massive false advertising that Pritzker has been saturating the airwaves, the TV stations, the social media with. But we've worked hard to try to get the message out. Truth is a powerful thing. The truth is very good for me and our administration. The truth is very bad for Pritzker. He's been trying to cover up the truth with massive false advertising, but the truth is getting out about his scheme to defraud taxpayers, about his use of the language of racists in his personal conversations. The truth is getting out about his trying to buy political office from imprisoned Governor Rod Blagojevich.
But when you talk about, you know, truth being a powerful thing, and the fact, you know, it's not like you didn't spend millions of dollars, you know, throughout the party to get elected, you know, in 2014. It's just, I mean, I'm not sure that there's now you're dealing with a billionaire who's spending more money, but it's, I mean, we're still faced with two very wealthy men spending a lot of money out of their own pocket to run for office here. I mean, has it been difficult, do you find, to be able to relate to the more common person because of your wealth, even in serving as governor?
Rick, my grandparents literally lived in a double-wide trailer. I did not inherit a nickel. I worked my way through school. I had no inheritance. We were solidly middle class, and late in life, my dad started to do pretty well, and we were certainly not poor, but we were not rich. And I worked my way through school, and every nickel that I've got, I made and earned myself by working for teachers and police officers, managing their pension assets, and doing extraordinarily well. And everything I've done in my life is to help the middle class achieve greater prosperity by starting companies, building businesses, and investing in education. And I've done that successfully for 40 years. Mr. Pritzker, on the other hand, inherited everything he's got, was a failure at the venture capital business. He lost everybody's money in his one venture fund that he raised from investors. And he likes to tout his work at 1871 for a business incubator. He put his own business partner in charge of that so he could siphon off the deals to come over to his venture firm to enhance his own wealth and position. He's always been a manipulator of the system with Blagojevich, with Madigan. And now that a Democrat in Cook County government has investigated him and determined that he did a scheme to defraud taxpayers, the truth is getting out on him, and we need that truth known by the voters.
Okay, we're speaking with Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune in the Allstate Skyline studio, and joining me on the phone is Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Governor, one of the things that you've been talking about in this campaign is wanting to incrementally roll back the income tax hike that was approved over your veto, to be able to incrementally roll that back. Yet the state budget that was signed by you spends the money, the revenues from that. If we are to roll back the income tax and reduce the revenues from it, what programs are you going to cut?
Rick, this is the most important topic that we can discuss when it comes to reforming government. We don't need to cut programs. What we need to do is reduce the cost of our government bureaucracy itself. We have one of the most expensive bureaucracies in America. We have 7,000 units of government in Illinois, way more than any other state. We have a broken pension system that is unaffordable and unfair, with people getting two or three pensions and pension spiking, et cetera. We have health care inside government that is beyond reasonable, way more costly than what taxpayers have in their personal lives. And we have mandates from Springfield on our local governments, on our school districts, that dramatically increase the cost for property taxpayers and income taxpayers. And we need to change that. We don't need to change human services or funding for education or infrastructure. If we made the changes to our government itself, cost of government bureaucracy that was recommended by my Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti and her bipartisan task force, and if we got pension reform done that I've recommended and have agreed on with some of the Democrats in the General Assembly, and if we reformed our health care in government the way the Democrats have done in Massachusetts, if we made those changes, we would save $6 billion per year for Illinois taxpayers. That's more than enough to balance the budget and begin to reduce the income tax, more than enough to fund education and human services. And we can begin to show to the businesses of America and the world and job creators that Illinois is fiscally responsible. Come invest here, and that'll help us dramatically increase the growth rate of our economy, which really should be our number one priority.
I'm not quibbling with some of the cost savings initiatives there, but things like consolidation of local government, changes on state mandates affecting local government, that's money that involves property taxes, not state income taxes.
No, but Rick, remember, the tax burden overall in Illinois is too high, and state income taxes supplement local property taxes and are sent to local governments and local schools. It's all in the mix of the burden of taxpayers. And if we could dramatically reduce local government costs and school costs through those reforms, that would free up resources from the state over time, not as massive amount of money in future years. The growth in the amount of money that the state would need to send locally could change. It all needs to be in the mix.
I understand, but I mean, as far as being able to reduce the income tax rate by making changes that affect property taxes. I mean, it's apples and oranges, isn't it?
No, not at all. So this is really important. This is critical for your listeners to understand. First of all, the pension reform that I have negotiated with many members of the General Assembly, the consideration model, could start off saving $1 billion a year at the state level and $1 billion at the local level. So that's the start. That's the base case. If we did the pension reform that I would prefer us to do, it could almost double those numbers. So that immediately reduces the cost of the state by more than $1 billion, and we could use that to begin to incrementally reduce our income tax. I've also recommended that we change health care inside government for government employees. If we made the changes that I'm recommending and do it the way other states have done, we'd save almost $750 million at the state level, not counting what that could change at the local level with local government employees. So right there is more money that we could use to balance the budget and begin to roll back the income tax increase. If we did that while reducing the regulatory burden on our businesses, show the fiscal discipline that businesses want to see, and have more companies come and invest and grow, that will grow the revenue of the state while not increasing tax rates, but increasing the tax base. And then over time, give local control away from the mandates on local governments and local schools. That will begin to reduce the cost of local governments, reduce property taxes over time, and that will free up resources from the state that doesn't have to supplement the cost of local government like we do now.
Obviously, Democrats are still going to have a majority in the General Assembly after November 6th. With you being reelected, are you prepared to work with Mike Madigan in a different way than you have in the past?
Well, we've proven, Rick, that we can get things done with the speaker there. He had a supermajority for the first 2 years. He wanted to force a tax hike. My opponent is, his whole campaign is, Rauner failed to stop Madigan on the tax hike. Well, we had to try, but Madigan had a supermajority. He could have passed any budget he wanted during the budget impasse. He had total ability with a supermajority. He wanted the budget impasse. They blamed me for it, but he wanted it and was more responsible than me. We all share some responsibility in it, but to force an income tax hike. Now that's resolved. We now have a balanced budget, reasonably balanced, can be managed to balance, and the changes from here could be incremental. And with Madigan there, we've gotten major progress done. With Madigan in place, we got the Future Energy Jobs Act done. We got historic record education funding. We got a new school funding formula done. We got school choice and a tuition scholarship tax credit done. We got the U of I expanded for $500 million to grow the tech sector of the Illinois economy. We've transformed Medicaid now, and we are now national leaders in mental health services in Medicaid. We've got historic national leading criminal justice reform done. We got a property tax cut for disabled veterans. We got an adoption tax credit for adoption families in the state of Illinois, all with Madigan in place. We can build on that success and get even more done in my second term, and in part because Madigan has never been weaker in his career. Because he covered up sexual harassment from his senior lieutenants in the legislature and in the Democratic Party, because women in the Democratic caucus are now standing up to him as they should have. Frankly, I think he should have been removed because of the way he covered up sexual harassment. But he's now weaker. Caucus members are willing to stand up against him. And for the first time, Democrats are calling for term limits just as I have. So he's in a position now where I believe members of his caucus can vote their conscience instead of what he orders them to vote, and we can make even more progress in the next 4 years.
That's Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Governor, I know you got to hit the campaign trail. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Rick, for the time. Appreciate the opportunity. Everybody, get out and vote.
We'll be back with more right after this.